I'm going to share with you a theory that will not be for everyone. I respect that and I understand it. And in fact, had I heard this theory a year ago, I would probably have some questions to ask about it too. But the more I think about it and the more I explore it, the more I understand it to be true. The theory is this. I believe every problem you currently experience and are aware of in your life, I believe that problem or problems are all your fault. Exactly. You can, to some, that is either going to be, well, a no-brainer or just probably the most repugnant thing I've ever said. But as I said, until a year ago, I'd have felt the same way, a little bit abrasive in bad taste. But yeah, the more I started exploring it as a truth, the more I started leaning into it and accepting it. But something happened this week that made me think, holy shit. I heard something that made me, it just made sense of probably the biggest and most ongoing challenge I face in my life. And it was really quite an eye-opener. I want to share it with you today. We'll also be exploring a minor change that will be happening in this podcast. So both of those are going to be discussed today. So nothing too heavy today then. Oh dear, I do like a provocative opener. I can't. Yeah, I don't know. You know, you got to get him in early. But yeah, we're going to be exploring both of those things. There's going to be a minor adjustment to the podcast as of next week. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. But first, let's begin on something a little bit lighter. First, while I have this sip of water, because it's very hot in this house. How are you, by the way? You are right. Oh God, when was it? I think about a few weeks ago, I mentioned how generally, I'm very even keeled. My mood, my temper, it very rarely spikes. I'm just usually on a flat line and I like it that way. So this pandemic, for example, there's not been much that's wound me up. Even when I see people congregating in mass groups in Hyde Park, I've been like, look, if they want to be bellends, then so be it. I'm not letting them affect me. And that's just my outlook on life. And I wanted to give you an example at the time I recorded that episode of the podcast. I wanted to share with you some things that generally do annoy me and I couldn't think of any. Then I went to Morrison's today and I remembered that this has been one thing that has fucked me off for as long as I can remember. So I'm going to share it with you today. But warning, I get that you're probably going to be thinking, dude, like that's not a problem. And I have some sympathy for that argument, but it's always negged me out. It's always pissed me off. And I want to share it with you now. So I'm going to give you three scenarios. And I want you to tell me which one of these three would just really ruin your day. Because one of them ruined my day. Right. So here are three scenarios. One of these annoyed me. Which one would annoy you? You walk into Morrison's, which is a supermarket it was. You walk into Morrison's and the first thing you see in the fruit and veg aisle is a dude taking a piss. Right, that's scenario one. Scenario two, you walk into Morrison's, you pick up your beans, you pick up your eggs, you pick up your bread, you walk past the bakery section and you notice that the guy that's packing the cookies, you know the cookies that are made in store, you notice that the guy that's packing the cookies is packing them into their bags without gloves. Okay, that's scenario two. Scenario three, you walk into Morrison's, you pick up your bread, you pick up your eggs, you pick up your milk, you walk past the bakery section, you pick up some cookies, you walk to the counter, you stood in the queue, 2 metres apart, obviously, and you notice that suddenly the person, three humans in front of you, is just kicked off and is shouting at the assistant because, in his opinion, she's taking too long, and he drops a racist slur at the assistant. They're your three scenarios. Which of those three would most likely ruin your day? Piss, dirty hands, racist dude. You chew on that while I have a sip. I'm a little bit annoyed, actually, because I've not got my usual smoothie today. By the way, I don't know if we've got any fans of Aldi out there, but if you ever find yourself in an Aldi, do yourself a favour and pick up their They have these bottles of green, these smoothies they've started selling. Pick up the green one. I can't remember what it's got in. It's got like cucumber, chia seeds, mint. It is like drinking an orgasm. It is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And that is my tip to you. If you like me, enjoy a little bit of an Aldi, pick up their green smoothie. They also have an orange one, which is carrot, orange and ginger. And it is pretty special. Not as good as the green stuff. But anyway, there we go. There's your little interlude. Let's discuss which one of those three scenarios ruined my day. It is scenario two. Just handling food without gloves. I can't even begin to explain. Let me just paint a picture, right? Morrison's, for those of you that live in Sheffield, Broomhill. I go there from time to time. And I walked past the bakery section and I noticed that the dude was packing the shortbread into the bags. And I just instantly, for this story to work, you need to understand I'm very short-sighted. So to see anything is an absolute revelation, right? And I thought, hang on, he was about, I don't know, 4 metres away. I was, is that guy, is he wearing gloves? He's not fucking, I don't think he's wearing, he's got to be wearing gloves. Is he packing cookies? He's not wearing, I don't think this prick's wearing gloves. Is he wearing gloves? I don't think he's wearing gloves, right? And then I just realised I'd been stood there for about 40 seconds. I realised I'd been stood there for 40 seconds speculating as to whether or not this guy was wearing gloves. Now, the more I thought about it, the more I squinted, I realised he wasn't wearing gloves. And then I just became immediately aware of, A, how much I hate Morrison's for not making this a mandatory requirement, and B, how much I hate his parents for doing such a shit job of raising him. I was just utterly in awe of what I was seeing. I think handling food without gloves is one thing that has always been a habitual anathema to me. Truly, truly troubles me. I'm the guy, if I walk into a shop, say, I don't know, say Greg's or Coupland's back in the day, and I see they're preparing sandwiches without gloves, I'll just do a 360 on my heels and I'll be right out of there. Won't even flinch. Hands and gloves, and I'm sure it's a British thing. Sorry, I don't want to get too, I don't even know if that's xenophobic per se. I don't want to, you know, I've grown up in here all my life, but I'm sure it is. It's just, it really grosses me out. And I just don't understand why it's okay. And I saw this guy packing the shortbread, and I was just stood there. I just rooted to the spot, you know. But the thing is, I became aware of the fact I was just standing there staring at him, hating his parents. I became aware of, you know, sometimes when you're almost have an out-of-body experience and you're watching yourself and your behavior and you acknowledge it's weird. That's what happened to me. I was like, dude, you've been stood here for about 50 seconds now staring. This is odd. Like, at least sneeze, cough, scratch your ass, just do something other than just staring at this guy. Then I started thinking, does he realize I'm staring at him? Yeah, because I'd understand if this is freaking him out. Just move, dude. Go and pick up a custard eclair. Do something else other than staring with your tongue hanging out with disgust. And I don't know. I just can't find a feasible excuse. Let's just look at the other two scenarios that I presented you with, right? I think you could conceivably find an excuse for those two. I mean, the dude that's having a piss in the aisle, right? Scenario one, maybe he's drunk, right? Maybe he's drunk, or maybe he's incontinent and he just let rip next to the courgettes and he had no control over his faculties. That's conceivable. As for the dickhead at the till, I mean, you see, the thing is with racism, my understanding, or at least my interpretation, I've always thought it's probably an environmental thing. So I've just always assumed in the instance of racist people, maybe their folks were just dicks. And, you know, via osmosis, you just lived in a house where your mum and your dad or your mates or whatever just had these bigoted views. And, you know, I'm a massive advocate of environmental influence. I'm not saying it makes it right. I'm just always the kind of guy nowadays looking for an explanation to things. So, you know, Few things I find more repugnant than racism. And I'm the kind of guy that just feels uneasy. I've known people in the past who, rather than saying I fancy a Chinese or I'm going to the Chinese, say just the most abhorrent shit like I want a chink. And I've pulled up friends on that. But the weird thing is, very very often people who say things like that don't even think there's anything wrong with it. I think we'd been out. We're going back about 10 years ago. Been out in town, drinking, and we were all coming back in the taxi, me and two of my mates. And my mate said, I might get a chink. And I went, do you mean Chinese? And he went, no, I might get a chink. And I said, well, why do you think that's okay? And he genuinely didn't see the problem. I think he considered it the same as saying Scot. And I very much don't, like, a Scottish person is a Scot. And I very much don't. And yeah, you know, a bit of a tangent there. But yeah, I just wanted to let you know that you might be thinking the racism incident is more morally repugnant than the hand thing, but the hand thing, Jesus Christ, like, why is it not in their code of conduct that all bakery staff have to wear gloves? Because I'm just assuming it isn't. It might be, and he might have just been giving the giant fuck you to the superiors and he was not interested in gloves, but ugh. And I think what makes it even worse is that now he's tainted. He's now tainted my experience of bakeries going forward, because here's a thing, right? I don't know if you're aware of Sainsbury's truly irresistible Belgian chocolate shortbread slabs. I think you get 4 for £1.50 or something. But if you haven't, you are just missing out on life's finest. You're just missing out on life's finest offerings. Honestly, truly irresistible. Sainsbury's double Belgian chocolate shortbread is just out of this world. And it's my treat. Every now and again, I'll buy it. But because this bell end in Morrison's was handling the produce with no gloves, I'm now tarnishing all bakery staff in all supermarkets with the same hatred. So I don't know if that makes me handist. I don't know if I'm now just lumping them all in as the same. Like, I've just invented a new discriminatory class. You know, we've got sexist, we've got racist, we've got ageist, and now, as of Sunday the 14th of June, yes, people, we have handist. I'm lumping you all in together. You're all as bad as each other. You come here with your filthy, stinking hands, tampering with my shortbread. You disgust me. Go back to your own scummy house. I don't know. As I said at the top of this, I don't know if anyone can empathise with my hatred for handling public food without gloves. But for as long as I can remember, that's one thing that's bothered me. Where do you sit? You okay with people handling your sandwiches without gloves? This is the one thing I'm grateful for my mum giving me, the one character trait I'm grateful for, because there's a lot of shit that I've got off my mum that I could rather live without, to be brutally honest with you. There's many character traits that I 100% got off my mum that I could happily live without. But for as long as I can remember, she's been obsessive about me washing my hands. So this whole coronavirus thing's like, oh, why is washing hands suddenly a thing? Like, I've been washing my hands since the dawn of time. But this is very much a mum thing. And just people preparing sandwiches or touching my shit without gloves just drives me fucking mental. I'm truly fascinated to know where you sit on the scale. Again, I want to know. Direct message me. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. How do you feel about people touching your shit? I'm now wishing I'd have said something to that guy. I don't know if I should have said something to that guy in Morrison. Because I don't think just not buying the produce is a sufficient enough protest. I think he needs to know that he's a scumbag. Just think of all the shit you touch on a daily basis. I remember when I used to work in KFC. I mean, like, your variety meal has been assaulted. Just to give you some backstory, like, my first ever job was, I used to work in KFC. I worked in the kitchens preparing the food, and I worked on the tills as well. But like the chicken just gone through, like, he's the amount of hand contact that happens with chicken is remarkable. But I've always been okay with buying chicken from KFC or anywhere that sells fried chicken. I do like a fried chicken. I've always been okay with it for one very specific reason. And that is because that chicken, albeit has been molested, it has also been... it's been subjected to like 100 plus degree of oil, right? Which has probably killed any germs that scumbag had, right? So I'm all right with that because then, you know, between hand molestation and my mouth, there's been heat, and heat is very effective at killing germs. So I'm all right with that. But why the hell am I talking about KFC? Anyway, look, I just wanted to share that with you. Let me know how I feel. So, now, what I want to talk about is the realization that I had this week. So if you go back to episodes of this podcast, if you go back to episodes 1 and episode 14 and episode 17, very prominent topics have been my concern or my disinterest in the prospect of fame, right? And that's for as long as I can remember. It's just never been something that's been seduced me. As you know, we've discussed this ad nauseum over the last, 20 weeks. This is episode 21, by the way. Yay me. Pat on the back. So I was listening to something this week that I'm going to play it to you now. I have just recently downloaded via Audible. How do you feel about audiobooks, by the way? Are you more a reader or are you more a listener? I'm wrong. I used to be a massive book reader, but recently I haven't been. But I've just recently downloaded a book called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, which won't surprise you necessarily, because I've mentioned recently in a few episodes how much I'm into this kind of shit. And I just bought this one because it was recommended by someone I really respect, who's very much into the way the mind works. That's what he does for a living, and he's very much into it. So I just downloaded it, and it's so far been absolutely brilliant. But there was one section from chapter one that... Get my speakers for you. It really made me think, holy shit. Let me play it for you now. This is... from The Power of Your Subconscious Mind.
Your subconscious mind takes the orders you give it based upon what your conscious mind believes and accepts as true. When you repeatedly say to people, "I can't afford it," then your subconscious mind takes you at your word and sees to it that you will not be in a position to purchase what you want. As long as you persist in saying, "I can't afford that car, that trip to Europe, that home, that fur coat or ermine wrap," you can rest assured that your subconscious mind will follow your orders and you will go through life experiencing the lack of all these things.
Now, I don't want to dwell too much on monetary gain per se. Just the principle of what he's saying there makes a lot of sense to me. And just to give you a very brief, succinct overview, this guy very much believes that we operate on our conscious level and our subconscious level, and everything that we experience and live in life is a direct result of what we are programmed with subconsciously, the things we tell ourselves, the things we repeat, the habits. Everything is based on our subconscious, which is the most powerful force within any of us. And we're like operating 90% of our day on our subconscious. And if you just break it down onto a really basic level so that we can get it, your route from your house to your place of work, assuming you drive, or even if you take public transport, you're not consciously making those turns to the left or the third turn on the right and then going down that road until you get to your place of work or whatever. That's just habit. It's just you're not even thinking about it. You're just doing it. Like, you can drive from your front door to your house and you're probably thinking about how shit that shag you had a week ago was. You're not even thinking about which turns you're taking. And that's just how you make a spaghetti bolognese. You're not thinking about it. You're making it because you made it a million times before. And I just think that principle operates in everything that we do and everything that we believe. And I was listening to that, and he references that particular approach to life a lot throughout this audiobook. I'm only four chapters in, and I just suddenly realized, I think I was about 25 when I used to work in radio, and my mate Danny, she was my co-presenter. I think I've told you this anecdote before. We were walking down Fargate in Sheffield, and she just said, "CK, you really should you should do more TV because you're really funny and you're great and it comes naturally to you. And I remember just, I remember thinking that was the most repugnant thought you could have said to me, because I just, at the time, the idea, and still, to be fair, the idea of visibility and people bothering me as I'm going about my day really bothered me. And I've always had that allergy to the principle of fame, but I love creating content, I love people watching it, I love people enjoying it, but if I could do it anonymously, that'd be my dream. But what I'm saying is, because I've been telling myself for as long as I can remember that the idea of fame is repugnant, that's probably why nothing I've produced over the years, long before you got radio, like when I was presenting online TV, like nothing's necessarily ever got to a stage of like mainstream visibility. And I'm willing to sit here and say that that's probably because my wiring doesn't want it to. So I'm not necessarily pushing myself hard enough for that to happen. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think this is about like an internal resistance that you have to certain things. And this, bearing in mind that I only listened to this particular chapter like maybe 3 days ago, and I was kind of just rooted to the spot because it just made a lot of sense. Like, my wiring as a human is one that doesn't find the idea of fame seductive. So I don't think it's compatible to have that outlook on fame and but then still question why none of your stuff has taken off or has found an audience to a degree where you make a living off it or whatever. The two things are incompatible. And then I started thinking about people like Jerry, what's her name? Jerry from the Spice Girls. For some reason, I've always had huge respect for Jerry because she was never ashamed of saying, for as long as I can remember, I wanted to be known, I wanted to be seen, I wanted to be famous. She was saying that when the Spice Girls were like at their peak. It's not something she's only saying retrospectively. I remember it being on Going Live. Going Live, by the way, Phil Schofield. I remember her saying like, oh, I've always wanted to be famous. And she was the most famous person on the planet at one point. And it just, again, seems to make sense to me. Like, some super famous people have always said, like, for as long as I can remember, I've just had this drive to be seen. I've had this drive to be visible. I've had this drive to be recognized. And they are. So what I'm basically saying is that for me, they've programmed their subconscious to have this thing where this means this is your fire. This is what motivates me. This is what's propelling me. And I don't think on a day to day, they're necessarily cognizant of it. Like, I think if you say something enough, you're not on a daily basis cognizant of it, but you're just behaving as a result of it. So Jerry wasn't waking up every morning thinking, I want to be famous by any such imagination, but she just believed and she wanted it so much that it was just automatic. And that's just, you know, she sees an ad for the Spice Girls not knowing what they're going to be. She's going, oh, well, there's a potential opportunity. I'll go for that. So what I'm saying is, I wonder if because my programming for as long as I can remember has been, oh, fame, not for me. I wonder if that has been an influence over the outcome that I'm experiencing now. And this comes back to what I was saying at the top of this podcast. I'm basically saying to you that nothing I've produced is perhaps, I mean, let's just assume for a second that, I mean, it could be shit. I've always said to you that I'm very mindful of the potential that it's just shit and nobody cares about it. That's one potential as well. There's also another explanation, which is, well, maybe just not pushing it hard enough because you're scared of what will happen if you do, or you're not reaching out to enough, like, you're not reaching out to enough people to share it because you're scared of what might happen if you do, and it ignites. And that's what I'm saying about the subconscious. It's not like I'm actively, how can I put it? I just think that our subconscious programming, our subconscious beliefs influence things and actions that we might otherwise take. That's pretty much what I'm trying to say here. And let me give you another example. Let me give you this example. This was something else which made a lot of sense to me. This is a podcast that I was listening to this podcast is by Lindsay Pellas, who's a model and an influencer. And she's talking to one of my favorite comedians, Kate Quigley. Now, Kate, in this clip, is talking about how, as a comedian, she's pretty much established in LA as a comedian. And she's talking about how, as a comedian, she feels it's important to stay in touch with her followers and just regular people, because once you become too big, then you lose touch with the kind of topics that people find funny in comedy. So this is the conversation. Let's have a listen. So to close then... Ooh, what the hell was that? Oh no, I'm going to play that to you in a minute. Here's the clip.
Comic, if the minute you lose touch with the people that are like regular everyday people,
right,
you can't be a comic anymore because no one relates to, like, I'm flying around on private jets. Not that I ever do that, but like if you did, you know.
Yeah.
So I just feel it's so important to connect to them. And also, like, me on the inside, like, I still, like, when I get recognized every time, I'm mm-hmm. confused. I'm like, how do you know, like, from where?
You know what?
You too?
I'm going to tell you something. This is going to be uncomfortable to hear. You're thinking poor.
I know.
I read this book. I read this book that changed my life over quarantine, and you're going to read it. I'm going to buy it for you. It's this book. It's called The Secrets of a Millionaire Mind. I'm going to sound like Tony. Is that his name, Tony Robbins?
Yeah. You should be the female Tony Robbins.
No, but okay. So the thing is, the book basically taught me, it was like we have these pressures since we're kids to think that being rich is bad. So we think that they're greedy. We think that people are bad. They fight over money. They must not have fulfilling relationships. Like, we kind of we're told by our parents we can't afford that. What do you think? Money grows on trees. We're taught that it isn't abundant. We're taught that we shouldn't have it. All these weird things that are like dig deep into our soul, and especially someone like you and I who were raised in a normal, like, upbringing. You know what I mean? I'm from Louisiana.
Oh, we were
trailer,
broke.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So it's like we're way off. But it was so mind-blowing to read this book. And it was all about changing your perspective and thinking you deserve money and how to change. It's called Changing Your Blueprint.
I have to do that because...
You have to change. Because even your YouTube dates, these guys should pay $1,000+.
Well, what?
At least. I'm making $5,000. You're a famous comedian and you're hot.
I mean, but it's only a Zoom date where they're competing with four other...
You're hot.
But...
You know?
Sorry, I just got lost again because I love that. If you're interested, that episode, it's from a podcast called Eyes Up Here, presented by Lindsay Pelas, P-E-L-A-S, and she's interviewing Kate Quigley, who you will remember I reference in this podcast, has been one of the inspirations to this podcast. I just love listening to Kate. But Lindsay's talking there about, you know, the poor mindset, and there's a lot to be said for the poor mindset. And I just started thinking to how I've always said for as long as I can remember, like, I'm not inspired or influenced by money. So I wonder if that's why I'll never have a shitload of it. Because my programming and wiring is, not that I'm saying I want a shitload of it, but I don't know if you've been onto my website recently, there is a section on there. And this is what it comes down to for me. If you've not been onto my website, and a few people have referenced this page, so I'm really happy I put it on there. There's a page on my website called My Porsche, where I'm talking about, for as long as I can remember, I've wanted to buy my brother a Porsche. And I don't understand how I think I'm going to do that unless I accumulate a certain degree of visibility or recognition or success that enables me to do that. And this is what I'm saying, like, none of my wiring is compatible with me ever buying my brother a Porsche. And when I realized that this week, it was very troubling, very, very troubling. So I don't know if what I'm saying here is that I've had to rethink my outlook on fame. I don't know whether I'm saying I suddenly want it, but what I'm saying is I've come to this crossroads and I'm now realizing that there's a massive incongruence between my programming and where I wish to be in terms of, you know, my content consumed by a lot of people and, you know, me sustaining my life through writing and creating and filmmaking and ultimately buying my bro a Porsche. None of those things can happen. Well, I'm not saying you have to be famous to be a success because you don't, but obviously when I create content that I like people watching, there's going to be a degree of visibility with that. So I guess what I'm saying now is I'm having a deep, honest, reflective and genuine appraisal on the business of fame. And I'm probably leaning more towards the fact that I should probably start becoming okay with it and maybe start embracing the potential of it a bit more, because it'll just make a lot more sense if you accept that everything we experience in reality is a 100% reflection of our subconscious. I do, by the way. So it's just a thought. Again, if you wanna get involved with that audiobook, it's called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy, and it's 100% worth having a listen to. I find it fascinating, and I'd love to know how you feel about anything I've said today. Do you think all problems are a direct outcome of your own actions, essentially are your fault. And by the way, the opposite is true. All successes you're enjoying are your own fault too. You know, it's not one way street. Do you believe all difficulties, challenges and problems you're experiencing are all your doing? Similarly with all successes. Or do you think there are other outside influences that shape your existence as a human? Fascinated. Hit me up. Right. Okay. Changes are afoot with this podcast and I'm super excited and I hope you share my excitement and I hope you come along on the journey with me. So do you remember in episode, which episode was it when I said this now? It was episode, I think it was episode 14 when I referenced a BBC broadcast. It was episode 14. Why Netflix, BBC Sky might wish to avoid a documentary by C.K. Golding. That's what the episode was called. And I referenced a BBC Three presenter called Ellie Flynn, who I've discovered recently. And she makes investigative undercover documentaries for BBC Three. I think she's knocked out about 8 so far. She's 27. She started making them when she was 24, I think. And I've just got a lot of time for her stories, for documentaries and for her as a human. She's got a very understated manner. It's not like, ooh, me, I'm a presenter. She's just very watchable, understated, and she's very much like an every... You can imagine just bumping into her in a pub, just a regular human, okay? So I just like a lot of her docs. And after I referenced her in episode 14, I watched a few more of her docs, and it just dawned on me. They're like, just get her on the podcast then. Like, just get her on the podcast. And me being an overthinker, I was like, well, I don't see how that's going to work. She's not going to be bothered. And I thought, well, you won't know until you ask. And then I don't know. So I sent an email to her and her agent. I'm like, yeah, let's do that then. So I did the interview, and it was great. I loved it. And I thought, oh, I could do more of these. So I thought, well, do more of them then. So I've lined up a few more guests, and moving forward, this podcast, there's going to be episodes like this when it's just me and you chatting, exploring, analysing, and then there'll be other episodes when I've got guests on. And after I recorded the interview with Ellie, I was like, this has a different feel to the usual CK musings, and would it be worthwhile just having another podcast that's exclusively interviews? And then just carry on doing the daily podcast as people know it now, because some people seemingly just like your thoughts and your yarn, so they might not necessarily like a guest. And I was like, oh, maybe, but you as an artist don't like being in a box. Like, you hate the idea of just doing endless CK yarn episodes would eventually annoy you. I'm the kind of guy that I want to mix it up every now and again. And if that's to the detriment of listeners, but you're happy with the art, then that's the way it's got to be. So guess what I'm saying is I decided, no, I'm not going to create another podcast. I'm just going to make this a podcast, which is just a reflection of me, what I'm interested in. And the podcast moving forward will have the occasional guest, and then sometimes it won't. I'm all right with that. In principle, however, that goes against how podcasts work. I've been led to believe that, you know, you're either one or the other. You're either a guest podcast or you're a host podcast that doesn't have guests. And here I am in typical CK fashion, just throwing the rule book out thinking it's going to work. Well, I don't know if it's going to work. It might do, it might not. But I think, as you know, I'm trying to get better at just not overthinking everything and just doing stuff because I want to do it. So I concede 2 things, but I don't give a fuck. The first thing I concede is that me bringing the occasional guests onto the show might annoy you. I'm fine with that. I'm also aware that having a show that's quite schizophrenic, 1 week guest, 1 week no guest, might undermine the ability for the podcast to develop an audience. I'm okay with that. We'll just try it and test it and we'll see how we get on. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm thinking of even changing the day that I put the podcast out. I don't know. I searched into Google the other day just out of pure curiosity, and this made me laugh. I put into Google, just out of curiosity, I think I might have been bored, best day of the week to release a podcast. And it said something like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays can be okay, Mondays are good, but just not Sundays. And I was like, holy shit, what made me think Sundays was a good idea to put out this podcast? Oh, Jesus. But I'm not in any rush to change the day that I put it out, to be honest with you, because it just works with my weekly pattern and my weekly routine to do it on a Sunday. But I might, just for a week of three, put it out on a different day. I'm thinking either Monday or Friday, but we'll just see. But you know what? This is still a young baby toddler podcast. This is only episode 21, so I'm happy to continue experimenting. But I want you then, ahead of next week's episode, to research Ellie Flynn's documentaries, because if you do that, it'll make next week's, when she's on the show, all the more engaging, because you'll feel like you know who she is. So I'm going to play for you now a couple of clips from some of Ellie's docs, and if you go onto iPlayer, they are all on there. This first one I'm going to play for you is from a documentary called Nudes for Sale. Now, this documentary blew my mind because I wasn't aware that there are young women out there, like 20-odd. The star of this particular episode is called Lauren. She's 22, and she's earning roughly £35,000 a month just by signing up to this website called OnlyFans. And she has monthly subscribers who pay her 10 to 15 quid a month, and they just get to see images that she uploads of her in relative state of undress. So Nudes for Sale is Ellie meeting these people who are making handsome money online through selling pictures themselves. And I'm just going to play this little clip for you now, which, again, is on iPlayer.
How weird does it get then, some of the things you get asked for?
Can I drink your piss?
Yeah, it gets so strange.
Someone's actually asked you that?
Yeah. People ask, like, you to join their relationships or, yeah, like, weird things.
Would you do this if there wasn't big money in it?
No.
That's Ellie asking the question, by the way.
There's been so many, like, horrendous downsides and horrendous judgment, and it's been mentally a lot. And the only thing that makes it okay is obviously the happiness it brings me, but money is freedom, and I'm free. And, like, if it wasn't for that, then I think I would not do it.
Have you ever been offered a huge amount of money for something you didn't want to do?
Yeah.
What?
Probably, like, will you sleep with me? I'll give you £5,000, and you're just like, no, bye.
I understand why Lauren would say no to that. She has a huge financial safety net, and neither she nor Annie say they do what they'd consider to be porn.
Damn right she has a huge financial safety net. She's earning £35,000 a month, human. She's 22 years old. She worked in an office before this, and she realised that office work wasn't for her. An absolute eye-opener. I've always been aware of the website OnlyFans, and I've always been aware of this, but I dramatically underestimated the earning potential. It is obscene. And I'm, to be fair, in all my years on this planet, never once have I wanted to have a vagina and breasts as much as I did after watching this episode. It just blew my mind. And what I love about this episode is that Ellie, who, by the way, is a journalist, an investigative journalist, she was honest enough in this documentary to say, I've never necessarily entertained the idea of doing anything like this, and I still don't, but I get it now, and you kind of just opened my eyes. And when Ellie's looking at this Lauren's earnings on the app on her phone, which shows how much she's earning, like, Ellie is just stunned, and she's like, holy shit. It's like she had a newfound respect for her and thought, this makes a lot of sense. So that episode is on iPlayer, called Nudes for Sale. Watch it. And something else that Ellie's produced is called Rent for Sex, which is uncovering landlords up and down the UK who are offering women free accommodation, a free room in a house in exchange for sexual favours. And here's a clip from this episode.
I'm about to go and meet a landlord who's offering a room in return for some kind of sexual arrangement. I'm feeling nervous because I'm going in with a hidden camera, and actually I'm trying to think about the real Julias and the women who would be responding to these ads who'd be feeling nervous about this meeting for a completely different reason. Free accommodation for attractive female, 100% genuine offer. In return, I would like once a week an adult arrangement, just boyfriend, girlfriend stuff.
So that was a clip from Rent for Sex, which, again, is on iPlayer. Get it watched. And to be fair, I would be very surprised if you don't like Ellie Flynn as a human, because I think she's great. I would also recommend you watch Abused by the Police, which is a doc she filmed in New York, which is telling the story of New York cops who have been allegedly sexually assaulting women in their custody. But here's the kicker. Until 2019, it wasn't illegal for New York officers to have sex with women in their custody. Same in 35 states across America as well. It was only in 2019 that it was outlawed in New York, and it's still legal in other states for cops to have sex with women in their custody. And again, I felt a little bit embarrassed that I didn't know this, but I guess that's the whole idea of investigative journalism. It likes telling laymen and plebs like me there's some shit that you're just not aware of. So if you've got time to watch Abused by the Police, that's on iPlayer 2. And also Child Brides is a real eye-opener, like 14-year-old girls marrying 24-year-old men. Again, I never had a clue. Massive eye-opener. But my point is this. Ellie and I, next week on my podcast, talk about all of these things. And it was just a real joy talking to her as well, because we both make docs, but obviously hers is dramatically different to mine in terms of the stories that she's telling. So Ellie and I chatting next week. Here's a clip. It wasn't all doom and gloom. We did have a bit of a laugh. Here's a question that I asked Ellie. Just three general questions, which I'm fascinated about. Tell me about your love of oversized coats, please.
Oh, you sound like my boyfriend. He's honestly like, can you buy something that fits you for once? I just love a coat, love anything oversized. So, yeah, I just look like I'm sort of drowning in like leopard print material whenever I'm making a documentary. I can't explain it. It's just, yeah, I love anything oversized.
It's very much your thing. And I can imagine people will tune in just for some tips, because there's always a new coat. There's always a new coat. Do you ever? You might be a bit too young for this. Do you remember Inspector Gadget? I don't imagine you do, actually.
I think I know what you mean, but yeah, I never watched it.
His closet with the exact same thing. Like, I'd just love to see your coat closet. It must be a masterpiece.
It is. I mean, yeah, there's sort of not really a closet and more just kind of like any crevice of the house that's sort of stuffed in.
So if you wish to marvel at Ellie Flynn's love of oversized coats, it won't take you long, because she wears them in every single, almost every documentary she makes. I'm a fan. It's cool. It's just her own London look. It's a very London look, I think, but that's where she lives, obviously. So jump onto iPlayer, type Ellie Flynn and knock yourself out between now and next week, because next week Ellie's on the show. And I have nothing further to say other than I hope you stick with me as I seek to figure out how to make this podcast a thing that I enjoy doing every single week. And I don't think, oh shit, I've got to do an episode. Like, keeps me sustained, interested, engaged, but more critically does the same for you. So yeah, have a listen next week and let me know what works for you on an ongoing basis. Thank y'all. See you in a bit.